Welcome to Happy News Network.
We are here to brighten your week while you take a break from doom scrolling.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Shayna.
We wanted to brighten social media, so we decided to make a podcast all about happy news.
Join us as we discuss our happy news finds.
Shayna, what is your happy news this week?
I've discovered that cooking or roasting pineapple with sea salt, honey, and paprika or chili powder is really, really delicious. And it's just like a nice spin on pineapple. And then also I've been catching up with a friend of mine who we both grew up in Cherry Hill in New Jersey and went to Rutgers for a year. And then we've sort of like reconnected our friendship. And it has been so nice to find that, you know, you can walk away from somewhere and lose touch with someone and just pick back up as if nothing has left off. You know, it's just a really nice thing to experience. And one of the trends of dealing with a pandemic is finding new ways to make friendships happen and work. And rather than going out and meeting new people, I can just be a better friend to the people I lost touch with.
I love that.
Yeah. What's keeping you happy this week?
I've been doing all this gluten-free baking and I've been trying all these different kinds of flour because gluten-free flour, sometimes you have to add stuff. Anyway, with all of my posting on social media, people have been reaching out to me like, try this, try this, try this. And I finally found, I think maybe a flour that I'm ready to like commit to, which is a big deal. I don't do commitment, but Namaste flour is incredible. And you can only buy it right now. You can only buy it in bulk, like at Costco or at like on Amazon. And I bought, when I decided to try this, I bought 10 pounds of flour on Amazon. Like this package arrived and Aaron's like, what is in this box? And I was like, oh, if it's heavy, that would be 10 pounds of flour. But it works. It like looks like regular all-purpose flour. It's like white and fluffy and it operates the same way. Like I don't have to add any extra like xanthan gum or whatever. Like who is buying that? So anyway, I'm really loving this. So I've been reading a lot of National Geographic just because I'm feeling kind of nerdy right now. And I have to start this first article by just reading exactly what Nat Geo published because the drama of it cracked me up. And I was like, I cannot let myself be the only one that knows that this is what they said. So this was their first paragraph to this. Along the banks of the Nile, in the necropolis of Saqqara, archaeologists have discovered ancient Egypt's first completely intact funeral home. Excuse me? Like, I cracked up reading that. And I was like, I will continue to read this 10-minute article and then condense it down to 2 minutes so everybody doesn't have to read it. But that was incredible. And I was like, I could talk about that sentence for like 4 minutes. So anyway, I'm going to quickly mention some activities that go on in a funeral home. So if that makes you unhappy or uncomfortable in any way, please skip ahead to Shayna's next article. I'm not going to know about it and my feelings that don't exist will not get hurt. So don't worry about it. After a ton of excavating, archaeologists have discovered a full-on funeral home. Like exactly what you're thinking of is what they found. There are separate areas for organ removal, embalming, and for burial. They've found cavernous rooms and a ton of artifacts that will help better understand the mummification process and the rituals that we didn't know about mummification before now. And ancient Egyptians believed that the body had to remain intact in the afterlife to protect the soul, which is why mummification occurred and existed. And embalming the body was like a holy rite and a medical practice, which was performed every single day for the 70 days of the mummification process, which is like wild to think about embalming a body for 70 days in a row. That's wild. But anyway, the images that I found of like what they have found in this process are straight out of a Brendan Fraser movie. And like, I was so here for it. I was like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen in my life. So, and if you want like an in-depth more about this, these findings, you can check out Kingdom of the Mummies on National Geographic on May 12th.
Thank you for sharing. Very, very neat. So late last year in Canada, they saw the construction and completion of a new custom-built transitional home for homeless LGBTQ plus youth. And 33 trans and queer youth will live at the Friends of Ruby House in Toronto. So let's talk about, I guess, how this got started really quickly. It's a very cool sort of very inclusive creation. LGBTQ plus youth from the community contributed thoughts and feedback into the final building. So it wasn't just created like any old dormitory, like it was created thoughtfully and with direct input. And each resident, and maybe if they have a partner or if they have a pet, gets their own personal room with no set duration restrictions of stay. There's also going to be housing available for people who need immediate shelter. And I think that's really, really beautiful because if every room is filled and you have people who are maybe not in great situations, it's kind of like having an emergency room, but for housing and for safety. It's so groundbreaking, the idea of a transitional home for people who need this refuge. There's only 8 other facilities like this in the world. So it's just been really beautiful to read about. And I was looking on the Friends of Ruby website, and the housing is also going to include things like a rooftop patio, which is lovely, and practical things like life skill workshops, such as cooking or financial literacy or mental and physical health services. They're going to provide professional counseling to those who want it. And there's also via the housing itself, this community connection to help people freely live truly to who they are. And the Friends of Ruby site, it lists all their donors for the project. And there were tiers and tiers of donations made. And it was very inspiring to see some major companies, mostly Canadian, but companies up on this donor list, places like Scotiabank, TD Bank, Deloitte, PetSmart Charities of Canada. And what I found most inspiring about all of this were the endless lists of individual and personal donors who contributed to this. It really seems like it was derived by community for community. And it's so inspiring to see. And it makes me hopeful that we can start to see some of that in America too.
Yeah, that's incredible. And I think just being able to look at what neighboring countries, or not even neighboring, but just what other countries are doing and taking some of those ideas and implementing them here or wherever you are.
Maybe there are takeaways that other types of organizations could sort of look at and say, what can we do to make overall quality of life better for these types of people or those types of people?
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. I love that. My next article is kind of about, you know, what we're hoping for with maybe that project and neighboring countries working together. And you talked last season about the offshore wind turbines in Italy, and I've talked about Denmark going green like often, but Denmark, my new favorite country, I think, just released plans for an energy island off their coast in the North Sea. So like just the term energy island is like so intriguing to me. But the plan is to make it about the size of 18 soccer fields at first, and then they want to triple it. Like, that's huge. And currently the goal is to be completely finished with this project by 2033, which is like a huge feat considering the size of this. And we're talking like 200 wind turbines on this energy island. And it will provide resources not only to Denmark, but agreements have already been signed to provide energy to Germany, Belgium, and the Netherlands. And this project helps the EU inch toward their goal of increasing offshore wind capacity by 25 times by the year 2050. So like the ultimate teamwork makes a dream work situation is happening over in Denmark right now. Energy island, obsessed.
I don't know if you saw my face drop when you mentioned the scope of project and timeline. That's remarkable.
Yeah. And they're like, yes, this is a huge cost, but we've talked about before, like, yes, the cost is large, but it's going to exist for so long. And the amount of work that it's going to do in that time.
And the work that it creates, it takes jobs and people to maintain, to build, to oversee, and to, I think I said maintain already, but to keep these projects going.
Running.
So yeah. It's it's an international feat.
Yeah. Wow. So incredible. I love Energy Island is like the new CBS reality show coming this fall.
Fully on the idea of collaboration, I'm going to talk about something I know you know about murals. This is called the American Mural Project, and it launched in January in the rural town of Winsted, Connecticut. It is a massive art tribute, really celebrating the working people of our country's history. It's also an educational opportunity and economic boost for whomever is the project's host community. So the AMP, as it's nicknamed, will be created via contributions. And it's expected that over 40,000 adults and children from all 50 states are expected to contribute. And this is a 22-year multi-million dollar project in the making. And it's consisting of the world's largest indoor collaborative artwork. This mural, it is 5 stories high and 120 feet long. And it serves as a tribute to working Americans. And so, like, I was so fascinated by this, looking at it, reading about it. And I found it so interesting and really beautiful that the choice to display the mural in a very small and isolated town, it just really stuck out to me. And so the project visionary Ellen Griesdeek, that choice was made because the town has a history as part of a web of manufacturing hubs. And so it really epitomized the tradition of strong work ethic here in the States, especially in the state of Connecticut. So of all the places in Connecticut, that is the location in the state getting to host the mural. And the town also had a number of buildings that structurally and sizeably could host the mural for a little while because it's huge. And so some of those buildings include old mills where Civil War soldiers' uniforms were crafted. So this is a very historic town, and Winsted is on the rebuild. It sounds like AMP is an active factor contributing to the town's resurgence. It serves as a piece of hope that something so big and beautiful could come to their little old mill town. And the town's educational programs have seen an uptick in flourishing with the arrival of the mural. People are contributing to the learning of art and the art of collaboration. So there's a lot of really good stuff going on at this mural. It's such an attraction and it's such a spectacle in its own way, with a very heartfelt, it's very patriotic, and it's really beautiful that it is helping to revive small town America using art, because how often have we talked about the value of artists and storytelling, and the story of America is very, very, varied, and the idea of working Americans it's really changed over the years, that sort of landscape. So I felt like sharing this because not only are we limited with the art we can go see right now, but everyone can go look up the American Mural Project and celebrate how their state has contributed to it so far.
Yeah, wow. I love that. I definitely need to deep dive into that some more, because that's incredible. I'm so grateful to be, you know, dipping my toe into it a little bit. And I love that this project is encouraging murals across America and for everybody to get involved. That's really cool. I love it. So for my last article, I'm going to do like a Denver brag. At the beginning of 2020, the city of Denver started talks of a program where mental health experts and emergency responders work hand in hand. Like if you call the police, I've witnessed this myself. If you call the police, they ask you specific questions to determine the severity of the situation and the danger of the situation. And then sometimes instead of sending cops, which usually are accompanied by a fire truck and an ambulance, so you've got at least 3 vehicles, if not more, and a ton of humans involved, you just get a van with 2 healthcare experts and they take care of whatever the situation may be, if it's determined that it's appropriate. And then with BLM over the summer, Denver decided, you know, on June 1st, they said, you know, we're going to fast track this. June 1st, they started implementing this project. And after just 6 months of data, they saw 748 cases in which cops were not needed and issues were resolved with healthcare workers. And my favorite example that I came across was, you know, there was somebody that was being a little erratic and healthcare workers showed up because it didn't seem like a dangerous situation. And this person was complaining that their feet hurt. So the responders bought this person a new pair of shoes and then they were fine and went on their way. And if you just imagine, like, if the cops, ambulance and fire truck showed up, they would have been, and this is not me making this up, this is directly from the police chief of the city of Denver. He said that because it was just responders, it was solved like immediately with a pair of shoes. But if cops and an ambulance and a fire truck showed up, that's expensive, let alone if somebody's complaining of their feet hurting with those people on scene, they would have rushed them to the ER. And then that person who's already struggling because they don't have shoes then has all these medical expenses. And the city of Denver police chief believes that because of this program, many lives have been saved because he knows from data that oftentimes fatalities at the hand of officers is because they are not equipped to diagnose or work with mental illnesses such as schizophrenia or bipolar disorder, and in turn situations get out of hand. And of the calls received in the first 6 months of this program, 60% of the cases that were called in were mental health concerns. So just seeing this fast-tracked immediately because it is an urgent need, I think, and then being successful in a major city is just really inspiring. And I know the city of Aurora, which is right next door, is also working on this. And it's a really cool project to see kind of come to life and to see. I've seen firsthand first responders showing up and dealing with an issue, and then there is no issue. It's just somebody needs somebody to talk to.
What an inspiring couple minutes we just got to listen to. You raised such a great point. Cops are not equipped to deal with mental health, nor should they be. They're not mental health workers. They're not.
Yeah, they have
workers.
Enough going on. Like, they have exactly. enough other stuff to think about. I can't even imagine. Also, like, I don't know. I personally don't know how to deal with someone with schizophrenia. Maybe I have before and I don't realize it, but I'm not a mental health expert. So I just think it's great. Like, people are already getting these degrees. It's not like we've invented this new thing. Like,
right. Well, I'm going to talk about a very beloved government employee. If you've seen Hidden Figures, you know about the inspiration for my next article. Taraji P. Henson portrayed Katherine Johnson. She was a mathematician, and in Hidden Figures, you saw that she shattered the atmosphere, the glass ceilings, racial barriers, and she worked at NASA for over 30 years. Her handwritten calculations helped launch the first Americans into space. And we lost Katherine in 2020 at the age of 101. And to honor her, NASA named a spaceship after her. Yeah, so the SS Katherine Johnson, it's a 4-ton Northrop capsule. And as of our recording today, the spaceship, which looks like one of those upside down potted plants, it's en route to the International Space Station, and it's got many purposes, some of which include delivering food to astronauts, delivering computer data processing equipment, and it's also got 120,000 roundworms that they're going to use for a muscle experiment. Stay tuned. Yeah. And
that's wild.
I know. And she's a versatile space capsule. What can I say? Can you imagine, like, you sent a care package to someone and you're like, I've got a SIM card, cookies, and fleas. Like, I'm just, and so we love some solar power. So this spacecraft really stood out to me because it's using solar arrays that are collecting solar energy to power its journey to the ISS. So cool. And the timing of the rocket launch was bittersweet. It was launched on February 20th, 2021. And February 20th was the 59th anniversary of John Glenn's 1962 launch. If you don't know who John Glenn was, he was the first American to orbit Earth. And Katherine Johnson's calculations were a viable part of NASA's computer pool for that launch, alongside other Black women at NASA's Langley Research Center in Hampton, Virginia. And in addition to the Mercury missions, which included that John Glenn orbit flight. Her calculations were also crucial in the early Apollo missions. And the Apollo missions, think Houston, We Have a Problem, the Apollo 13 movie with Gary Sinise and Tom Hanks. And as like a fun fact with trivia, like I started going down the research rabbit hole of John Glenn and Katherine Johnson. He personally asked her to verify his Mercury mission's orbital trajectory calculations. Like, that's how valuable she was, that the astronaut himself was like, can you double check this for me? And I just think about 1962 and socially what was going on in America at the time, and that she was working in Virginia and not too far from DC. And that she was such a valuable part of NASA. And in all of my research about NASA over the years, women, they were called like the computers, like the women who did all the calculations by hand, were the reason that rockets got launched, because without calculations, you can't just build things. You can build them, but you can't plan missions with them. And so I just feel like they launched the Perseverance to Mars rover and it landed successfully. And just thinking about space exploration and celebrating the roots of it felt really like something to share.
I love that. I love outer space. I love women doing really cool things. I love solar power, and I'm here for a weird care package. I love all of this. It's incredible.
Yeah. And now I need to go rewatch it in Figures. And like know all these trivia and be like, oh, this moment has so much more weight to it. So in addition to looking up roundworm muscle experiments, what are you looking forward to?
Today is St. Patrick's Day, which I've already said is not a holiday that I typically like celebrate a lot. But my boyfriend is in an Irish band that started during COVID just to do something outside that brought people joy. And this is the first time they did an indoor concert that was like a group of 20 people in the fall. But they did another one for St. Patrick's Day because they are an Irish band. So just reminding myself, like, music is a great way to just de-stress and hang out with people socially distant and enjoy and no stress. Like, just no stress is a big thing for me right now. So yeah, I was really pumped about that, and I'm looking forward to watching their concert tonight.
Very exciting. And music is a proven stress reliever, so it's an added layer of happiness.
Yeah. And like, luckily his band members are like the most wonderful humans on the planet, so it's not painful to hang out with them. Like, it is sometimes when you're with bands and you're like, wow, some of you are a nightmare. All of these people are delightful. Their spouses are delightful. It's always a delightful time. So I'm pumped about this.
Positive social connections and music. I'm here for it.
Yes. What about you? So, what are you looking forward to?
Today is St. Patrick's Day. Although I am pale and have red hair, I am not Irish, but I will very gladly have some snacks to celebrate. The next holiday on my calendar is the start of baseball season. With every episode, we are one day closer to baseball season. I'm ready for it. I miss football. I sort of follow hockey. I don't really follow basketball. I sort of do, but like, baseball's my next thing. And so I'm just like counting down the days and very excited for it.
Love. I love.
We love all forms of happy news and happenings.
Be sure to send us your own day-to-day happy news. Cute pet stories, kids saying the darndest things, whatever you're up to, we love it all.
Email us at hnnpodcast@gmail.com. Also, follow us on social media at hnnpodcast for happy news throughout the week.
And be sure to subscribe to us through Patreon, where you'll get exclusive content and more.
Until next time, I'm Kristen.
And I'm Shayna.
Have a happy week.